Imagine a justice system built on rigorous evidence, not gut instincts or educated guesses about what works and what doesn't. More people could access the civil justice they deserve. The criminal justice system could be smaller, more effective, and more humane. The Access to Justice Lab here at Harvard Law School is producing that needed evidence, and this podcast is about the challenge of transforming law into an evidence-based field. I'm your host, Jim Greiner, and this is Proof Over Precedent. So welcome to Proof Over Precedent. I'm Jim Greiner, and I have with me Mandy Mobley Lee. And Mandy, why don't you give us a brief introduction of who you are?
Sure. Thank you, Jim. So yes, I'm Mandy Mobley Lee. I am a assistant director of research innovations at the Ada J Lab at the Harvard Law School. My background is I came up as a computer scientist. That's my undergrad degree. Did some technical consulting and then went into the business side of technology for a few years. Did some sales and business development. I started a few companies and then that led me to the law. And so I went back mid-career to law school and got a law degree and decided to take my skills from the business world and apply it to improving access to justice.
Terrific. And how long have you been with the Access to Justice Lab?
A little over 2 years now.
And what's a fun fact about yourself?
A fun fact is that I really enjoy going to the Comic-Con and Dragon-Con conventions. I live in Atlanta, so Dragon-Con comes to us every Labor Day weekend, and my children and I march in the parade and go to all the events. It's a lot of fun.
I know what Comic-Con is, but what is Dragon-Con?
It's very similar. The focus, I think, is slightly more on gaming because of the Dungeons and Dragons portion, but people still dress up in cosplay. Dragon Con's unique in that it has a parade. And so that's what we participate in, but it's a lot of fun. Very similar to Comic Cons.
We are using images to accompany almost all of our podcasts and blog posts. So if you have any images of your family in cosplay, please share them at some point. Perhaps we could post them as well.
I will. I have several.
Terrific. So we're here to talk about a project that you've been developing that tests the effectiveness of artificial intelligence in providing legal services. So why don't you give us the 30-second elevator pitch? What's the absolute essence of this project distilled down to 30 seconds?
So we are looking at evaluating whether the use of AI will assist pro bono attorneys or volunteer lawyers in being able to see more clients and come up to speed in an area of law that they may not be as familiar with.
And would this be in the context of an interaction with someone they're attempting to help, or is this when they're trying to write memoranda, or what's the setting?
It is the setting of client services. And so the attorneys would be interacting with the AI and using the feedback from the AI to guide their discussions with their clients.
Terrific. And is it always attorneys, or could it be a paralegal, or could it be a project assistant for this particular study that we're planning?
For this study, we're looking only at attorneys.
Okay. So that's the basic idea. And then the comparison, so we have an AI assisted attorney interaction and versus what?
Versus business as usual. So it would be the client, either making a phone call or coming into the office to speak with the attorney and the back and forth that would take place without the use of AI.
So that's the basic elevator pitch. Let's go back and talk through some of the details here. So AI is everywhere these days. Everything is AI, and AI is beating 90% of the students on the New York bar exam, and it's demonstrating all sorts of creepy and amazing capabilities. For the Access to Justice Lab, you have formed a partnership with someone who's developing a new AI system or an AI intervention. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And who is it?
So it is Queen's University. They're based in Canada, in Ontario, and they have a conflict analytics lab who has developed the Open Justice platform. And that is a generative AI solution focused on law.
And when you say it's focused on law, what does that mean?
So generative AI platforms in general, they take in information, process it, have an additional background information to draw from, and then it generates feedback based on the prompts. And so in this case, it's being fed rules of law, procedures. Of course, we would have to tailor it for a particular jurisdiction based on where we're going to be evaluating it. But the concept is you would feed it rules of law and procedure, and then based on the prompts, it would take advantage of that knowledge, case history, et cetera, and then generate a response.
Does it also soak up as training data just non-legal sources? So, anything that's available on the internet, or is it trained only on legal background information?
I will give you the standard legal responses that it depends, which is a good thing because it's highly customizable. And so the conflict analytics lab will be customizing the platform specific to the field partner. And so if, for example, in their day-to-day business, they do consult the internet and other sources of information, then we can also feed that into the Open Justice platform.
And so right now, at least in the iteration that the Access to Justice Lab is involved with assessing, it is not a solution that is supposed to go directly to the consumer. There's supposed to be a professional in between the AI and the consumer. Is that correct?
That is correct in the short term. However, the Conflict Analytics Lab does have intentions of eventually having a solution ready for self-represented litigants, but the one we would be evaluating would be based on attorney interaction.
Okay, and so tell me how that works. So somebody makes contact with an attorney and via the telephone, I take it?
It could be a number of different ways, but I think telephone primarily. There could be some in-office visits as well. But the client usually comes in or, phones the attorney and gives them a scenario, a situation. And so, more likely than not, the client isn't using all the legal terms that you would need to use to effectively prompt Open Justice. However, the attorney is the person who takes that information from the client, knows what legal prompts to use, and then would prompt the Open Justice platform with the legal questions. And so, the attorney would prompt Open Justice. Open Justice would process the prompt, deliver a response, and then there would be an iterative back and forth between the attorney, and the AI, as well as incorporating additional questions to the client to get more information.
And presumably the lawyer has some background in the area, is that right? Or is the lawyer, could the lawyer be an utter novice in the area?
So, it does depend on the field partner. The particular field partner that we are looking to work with, they have volunteer lawyers, and so sometimes they will be experts in one area of law, but they're volunteering to assist in a new area of law that they may have limited exposure to based on volunteer experience, but they're not a day-to-day expert.
And what kind of cases are we looking at? Are we looking at all sorts of cases at once, or we're going to try to zero in on a particular case type?
So, for the purposes of the study and the evaluation, we will narrow it down to, one or two different case types. But Pro Bono Ontario has a number of different types of cases based on their clients' needs. And so it ranges from landlord-tenant disputes. It can involve family law matters. So it depends on what we want to narrow on for the particular study. But the landlord-tenant is something that I think has gotten a lot of attention lately, and so that's one that I think we're going to try to focus on.
And so Open Justice, is it designed to be flexible in the sense that it can be used with pretty much any legal area, or does it need to be trained specially in order to handle, say, a landlord-tenant matter, and then you train it again to handle, say, a domestic violence restraining order matter?
That's a great question. And so I think the way you described the latter scenario is more how you would interact with the Open Justice platform. And really that mirrors how attorneys come up to speed in an area of law in a particular jurisdiction. And so anytime an attorney moves jurisdictions or they, go from one subject area of law to another, there's a lot of, training and knowledge that they have to come up to speed on. So very similarly, Open Justice would go through that same process.
Okay, and so we have Pro Bono Ontario as the potential field partner, we hope, and then we have the product from the Conflicts Analytics Lab, and basically then the idea is that the clients will come however they usually come to Pro Bono Ontario with presenting with a problem, and if it fits within the problem associated with the study, then what would happen at that point?
So at that point, we're still determining whether we need to receive client consent, but we would already have attorney consent to use the Open Justice platform. And so at that point, if the client has a case of the type that we're studying, the attorney would be randomly assigned to one of three groups. One group is the Open Justice group, which is the scenario I explained earlier, where the client would give them information. The attorney would then prompt Open Justice, receive feedback from Open Justice, and go back and forth between the client and the Open Justice platform. The second group is similar, except that group would be assigned to ChatGPT. And the reason we're doing that is that we want to do a comparative analysis between Open Justice and other generative platforms like ChatGPT. And then the third group is the group that is business as usual. And so, assuming no AI or no access to AI, the client asks the attorney questions. The attorney responds with answers and, additional questions for the client. And the back and forth is only between the client and the attorney.
And in the first two groups, both of which have some sort of AI assistance, does the attorney only just basically serve as a conduit between the AI and the client, or is the attorney using the inputs of the AI and delivering to assist the professional judgment of the attorney? Does that make sense to what I'm
Yes.
asking? Yeah.
That's a great question. We're still working out the specifics, but my take on it is that the attorney would absolutely have to have the ability to override anything that comes back from Open Justice or ChatGPT if it is, absolutely incorrect. But we do want to make note of that because that information will help us determine whether the AI is assisting the attorney or causing the attorney more work.
Got it. There's a recent study, it was written up in the New York Times, involving medical diagnoses and ChatGPT. And ChatGPT outperformed both the physicians in a diagnostic test and the physicians assisted with ChatGPT in terms of coming up with a proper diagnosis. And so I think for this test, what we're saying is that at first we're going to test whether ChatGPT or Conflicts Analytics Lab product can assist the professional in delivering the judgment or delivering the information. But in a future iteration, we may just want to test whether the software itself outperforms because there's a question as to whether the human being is the problem.
I think you're right. I think that's the eventual path that Open Justice wants to go down with eventually having a platform that's accessible for self-represented litigants where there is no attorney in the middle. But, of course, they need to make sure that the product is reliable to deliver that to the public. And so the first step is testing it with attorneys, which is what we're doing.
Terrific. Now, when you say we're going to test it, that presumes that we have some method of scoring or of assessing the quality of advice that's to be delivered. So how are we going to do that in this study?
So we are going to be using a panel of experts. The panel of experts will be lawyers who are very familiar with the area of law and jurisdiction that we'll be studying. And they will have transcripts of the back and forth between the clients, the attorneys, and one of the two AI platforms or no AI at all. And they would be looking at those transcripts and then scoring them based on the different metrics that we come up with that are important, like accuracy, time to resolution, that sort of thing.
It suddenly occurs to me, and believe it or not, this has never occurred to me until just this moment in this conversation, that we will also need to score these responses based on some effort to measure usability to the consumer. I can imagine an interaction in which the answer is technically perfect in the legal sense and delivered quite quickly, but is delivered in, say, jargon, pure jargon, or is delivered in a way that the ultimate user can't deploy it, can't access it in a way or interact with it and form an action item or form a list of action items that the user is supposed to assess. I'm curious if that just occurred to me now. Maybe you've been thinking about this all along. Have you been thinking about this all along? Because I'm not actually sure how we'll do that, but we're going to need to do it in some way.
No, I think that's a good point, Jim. We have mostly been focused on just, how the AI is assisting the attorney who is using the AI platform. But I think you're right. Just forward-looking, it would be good to have an additional metric that looks at, the plain language or, understandability of the response of the AI. It may not impact its effectiveness for the attorney. But like you said, it could impact the usability for a self-represented litigant.
This harkens back to yet another study that I read about comparing AI to physician interactions, this time not on diagnostic accuracy, but on bedside manner. Of course, the AI couldn't actually be next to the bedside because we still don't have the robots walking around the hospitals yet. But in terms of a chat interaction, whether you had a human on the other side of the screen chatting with you, or whether you had software chatting with you on the other side. And it turned out that that was another area in which the AI outperformed the humans. So the AI was actually better at being humane and understanding and sympathetic and empathetic than physicians were. That's a different question than the usability of the advice. But nevertheless, it's another creepy thing that that AI has done well. Tell me how this study came about. How did this start?
So, my colleague Renee Danzer had met previously with Samuel Dahan, who's the professor over the Conflict Analytics Lab at Queen's University. And she introduced Sam to me because of my background with computer science. And he was interested in partnering with the Access to Justice Lab to do an evaluation of the Open Justice platform. And that conversation started about a year ago. And then back in the fall, we started applying for funding opportunities and speaking with interested parties like Pro Bono Ontario, who would like to deploy a customized open justice solution for their organization. And then most recently, last month, we were awarded an Insight grant from the Canadian government, and that will allow us to work with Pro Bono Ontario for the Conflict Analytics Lab to do the implementation of Open Justice, and then for the Access to Justice Lab to do the evaluation.
In terms of field operations, this is actually a fairly rapid development. If your first meeting with Sam was, say, a year or 14 or 15 months ago, and we have the first grant that's going to support the project, that's fairly speedy development. It strikes me that perhaps one of the reasons is that the outcome variable that we're measuring is not a court outcome or a socioeconomic outcome. It's assessing the quality of the advice that's given, and then we sort of stop there. Does that make sense? Do you think that's accurate, or do you think there was something else that allowed you to develop this project so quickly?
I would agree with you that the accuracy and helping people do their jobs quicker, faster, more efficiently is absolutely a focus. I think two other reasons I would give and why we've been able to receive funding so quickly. One, just the topic of access to justice and AI is very hot right now, especially when you think about who currently is using AI platforms in law, and it's the private lawyers and law firms. And so it's potentially increasing the access to justice gap. But our project is working to decrease that gap by enabling AI solutions for the access to justice lawyers. So I think that that's a good selling point of our project as well.
And so suppose it were the case that we found out that that having AI available to the lawyers increases the accuracy, decreases the speed, and potentially is either neutral or has positive effects on the usability of the advice vis-a-vis the consumer. In other words, we had the wildest dreams of Sam and everyone at the Conflicts Analytics Lab realized. What would be the next step?
I think it can go in a few different directions. If it's successful, a conservative approach is would be let's take this and implement it either in the same area of law in a different jurisdiction or in a new area of law in the same jurisdiction. And so there's, minimal additional training for the solution to expand it. However, if you wanted to take a broader approach, we could say that the Open Justice Platform is helping organizations like Pro Bono Ontario. And so let's look at other volunteer lawyer organizations or legal aid organizations who could also benefit from open justice and maybe try a new area of law, new jurisdictions, and see if we can get similar results.
So you mentioned the Conflicts Analytics Lab is hoping ultimately to develop the product that can go directly to the consumer. I'm not sure you'd call them a client anymore, but to the person who has the legal problem. Have they given you any idea of what they think that will look like eventually, or is that still too much in development to be able to describe?
I think the landscape is changing so quickly, it's hard to say what that might look like. But if you look at some direct-to-consumer products right now, where consumers can use products online to help draft a letter, for example, to their landlord if they've been given an eviction notice. So, highly interactive online portals that are assisting consumers with basic legal problems. I think, it could look something like that, or it could be something even more sophisticated. And I do think it's further down the road for Open Justice because, again, they want to make sure they test it out pretty thoroughly with attorneys before they offer it to the public.
If we think about placing this product and this type of software in the landscape of the ways in which software is assisting lawyers to do their jobs, or assisting lawyer-client interactions, or in some cases replacing lawyer-client interactions, where does this fit? To give that question a little bit more substance to it. Upsolve.org, which is, won every possible award and been written up in every possible magazine and newspaper. Basically, it has its front end is directly to the consumer, and then it is a series of guided interview questions if you qualify for their services, if your income is low enough to qualify for their services. It's a sophisticated guided interview that then spits out forms on the back end, but then there's a lawyer at that point. That's where the lawyer sits. The lawyer sits behind the software. One other limit about Upsolve is that it's only for one specific area of law. In other words, it only does bankruptcy, right? And it spits out the forms and provides some guidance ab about how to proceed from there, but it only does bankruptcy. LegalZoom basically attempts to take the lawyer out of the loop and say directly to the consumer. The consumer is supposed to figure out what forms they need. In other words, do I have a divorce matter? Do I have a child custody matter? Do I have a landlord-tenant matter? Whatever. And then they can pay for and download the forms. This one is something still different. So, unlike LegalZoom, the lawyer is not out of the picture entirely. And unlike Upsolve, the lawyer is not behind the software. Here, the lawyer is in front of the software. Do you have any views about which of these might be more or less effective, or what the advantages and disadvantages of these various ways of interacting might be?
So, in a complex area of law, I think it is important to, have a lawyer involved at some point in the process. One of the reasons I believe that LegalZoom takes more of a hands-off approach and has the consumer pick and choose which forms they need is that once you start getting into the guidance or the legal advice space, the unauthorized practice of law comes up, especially if there is no lawyer in the loop. And so Upsolve gets around that by having the lawyer in the loop. And so, unless we see major changes in the unauthorized practice of law regulations, I think that at some point Open Justice would deploy something similar to Upsolve, meaning at some point in that process, there would be an attorney similar to the way TurboTax, you can do your taxes online, but then you can loop in a live accountant to, review your taxes before you submit them.
And if the regulatory barrier weren't there, is part of the idea for open justice to have the lawyer help formulate an accurate question for the software? In other words, the idea is that maybe the client doesn't exactly know how to query the software well, and so the lawyer knows how to query the software well, even if the lawyer doesn't know the answer.
I think that is the situation today, but tomorrow, I believe the goal is to make the prompting so easy that a 5-year-old could ask a question and get back an accurate legal response.
Yeah, and I keep coming back to this example of the most successful piece of software developed, to my knowledge, in the past 2 or 3 decades, which is Google. And when you go to Google's interface, it actually could not be more simple. I mean, it really is just, Google for the past years and years now has just had a blank web page with one place, and you just type in things, right? And it's got increasingly smarter and sophisticated at figuring out how to respond well to what you type in, what you actually want.
It can also predict what you might ask it based
Right.
on other data that it's gathering. So we may, soon see anticipatory legal questions coming to us as opposed to us going to software to ask.
That's something that I had thought of, but hadn't ju just realized now how creepy that might be. That would I log into Google instead of seeing the blank web page and typing in what I wanted to know, already having it there, what I'm about to log in for, and already having the question asked and answered. That's really creepy. Yeah, I mean, I think if we can eventually train the software to where it can do. It can figure out, what people are actually asking in the legal sense. That would be a huge help. What's the time frame? Suppose there were fewer than usual, say, administrative obstacles, because the grant has only recently been announced, so we've got to go through things like a contract and smoothing over operational difficulties. What's the timeline, do you think, until we might have results for this project?
Results, I would say 2 to 3 years, because before we can get to results, we first have to have the Conflict Analytics Lab customize the Open Justice platform for Pro Bono Ontario. And that customization could take 6 to 12 months. As you mentioned, there's some administrative things that our lab can be doing in parallel. But then once that product is up and running, there would be some training involved with the attorneys, and then we would come into play once the attorneys are using it with clients, and we would then begin to enroll different cases into the study, randomly assign them, and then once all of those have been coded and collected, then we would give it to the panel of experts to then score. So there's a series of things that has to happen. And then those scores, of course, would have to be analyzed. And then we'd have to determine whether there are differences between the three groups.
And the panel of experts, I refer to them as a jury. The jury, just in case anyone's interested, will not know which condition produced the transcript, right?
Yes, that is the goal, and we are still thinking through how we would mask that. I think it's less complicated to mask whether someone's using Open Justice or ChatGPT. It's a little more complicated to mask the fact that AI is being used, period. So that's something we're still working through.
I can imagine we might have to edit the transcript so that, for instance, if the lawyer says, "Oh, look, the computer is telling me this," or "the bot is telling me this," we might have to edit that out in order to
Yes.
preserve the blinding to the treatment condition.
Yes.
What else should we all know about this outstanding study that we haven't gone over?
Well, I would say that there's, a number of organizations who have raised their hands saying that they're interested in doing something similar, like Pro Bono Ontario. So we've spoken to different legal aid organizations in the US who are interested in potentially deploying an AI solution to assist. We are, having parallel conversations with them. Some have recently had some budget constraints that have limited their ability to take on new projects like this, but the interest is there and is growing. So if we are able to show success in this area, I think there will be a lot more hands raised, and a lot more work to be done.
Terrific. Mandy, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with Proof Over Precedent. And we'll be looking forward to the results when they become available.
You're quite welcome, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Proof Over Precedent is a production of the Access to Justice Lab at Harvard Law School. Views expressed in student podcasts are not necessarily those of the A to J Lab. Thanks for listening. If we piqued your interest, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Even better, leave us a rating or share an episode with a friend or on social media. Here's a sneak preview of what we'll bring you next week.
So it's interesting. There's a good number of studies that showing that non-lawyers can be as effective as lawyers in more routine and procedural areas once they've gained specialization in an area. But the evidence is still a little bit sketchy. Like, we don't really have any comprehensive studies on whether non-lawyers are as effective as lawyers in an immigration context.